Hello guys, welcome to the Blackspin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to a brand new episode. And today, we are not alone. We are with the best friend of the pod.
Best friend.
Let the people know. Tamani is here today again.
The guy. We should actually say your full name as well. Tamani Carrier. Like,
do you know what it is? Really? I'm actually always scared of saying, of butchering the name, so I'm letting I'm scared to. So that's why I like, you know.
But yeah, man, it's Tamani Carrier
from the Guardian. One and only. Get exactly. to know. Come on.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you for joining us again. We're good.
Yeah,
man.
No, I'm very happy to have you on, man. As usual, Tamani. So thank you, man.
Thank you.
Happy I know to you be had back. Like a long couple of weeks. You were at Australian Open in person.
Yeah.
Quickly, how was that like this year? Like being at Australian Open.
It was kind of hectic. A lot going on as always, like long, you know how Australian, you know, these days it's so long, matches finishing at 2 a.m.
Yeah, true. there was a lot of that this year.
Obviously it was, I mean, the tough thing was Mike Dixon, one of our colleagues from Daily Mail, passing away during the tournament.
Yeah.
So that was just a bit surreal. You know, hard to, you know, just a bit crazy. A crazy tournament again.
You stayed out there as well afterwards doing some touring of Melbourne in your RAV4.
I'd never driven on a highway before. I ended up driving around the Great Ocean Road.
I didn't know you were driving around there.
Hired a car, 4x4 as well.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
The big team.
It could have gone wrong. It could have gone very wrong.
Shout out to you. I love that. Because I've never driven a board.
That is so lit. Especially a place that, like, especially like all the way to like Australia. Exactly.
Other side of the world, yeah.
I think this is the times like this you have to appreciate the sport a little bit. Because not every sport where you have that experience where you can go to a whole nother like world and be doing stuff like this. Like, that's so amazing. I didn't even know that. Crazy. But yeah. Well, glad you're back and glad that you enjoyed yourself. And now we can disturb you to join us and talk about some tennis. Let's talk about some tennis.
Wow. Well, I say where to start. There's only one place to start. Really.
There's only one place to start, guys. Only one place.
Our Italian Ghanaian sister.
Come on.
Hopefully we get to a point where we can actually talk to her, like, at some stage. Do you get me?
I remember when we were at Wimbledon last year, I did actually see her and I was like, oh, F it, let me just go say hi to her.
And if you don't know who we're talking about Jasmine Paolini, the one and only, now WTA 1000 champion. Who would have seen that coming?
Crazy.
But yeah, what a week she had in Dubai. Like, mm-hmm. I want to say she beat two seeded players en route.
I think she beat two or three.
Maria Sakkari.
Yeah, so it's Beatrice had Admire first round, who she was literally on the brink. Well, she was a set and like a double breakdown, I think, but came back and won that in three sets.
Mm.
And then, yeah, Sakkari, I want to say that was in the quarterfinal.
Third round.
Okay. And yeah, Sakkari, is she top 10?
She was the eighth seed. I think she's just out of the top.
She only just got out now.
Yeah.
I think after that match, she got out.
Yeah. Or like just before the tournament.
Something like that.
So yeah, Sakkari, these are high caliber players that she's beating. And then she got a walkover in the semi-final.
Rebekina.
Of course, Rebekina.
Which is, I mean.
A little funny moment about that. Like when that was announced, I was like, yeah, we'll take it. And someone like Lucy, I was like, you know what? My bad, bro. I completely forgot to say speedy recovery, because I do fuck with Rebekina. So it's like, all right, yeah, speedy recovery, but let's go by lady. So yeah, but no, she had like a, when you actually look at her run, it's
I want to say as well, Leila Fernandez in the second round, that was a straight sets win. And Fernandez, as we all know, she's a talented player.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some would say, oh, she hasn't really done much since the US Open, where she lost to Emma Raducanu.
Mm.
But she's still young, like 20, 21.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, back to Paolini, like, watching that run, because I did watch pretty much all of her matches apart from the semi-final. I wasn't able to watch the semi-final against
That one was really close. Chester,
yeah.
That one was really close. I watched that.
But she won that in straight sets.
Yep.
But the actual final, again, I was at work whilst that was being played,
yeah.
but had it on, like, on my screen. And I'm not going to lie to you, I thought she was going to lose.
Really?
Yeah, I really did. Because she lost the first set, didn't she?
She did, yeah. Actually, no, I don't. I was the same because I was out. I was actually at a bottomless brush.
Okay.
But I had it like, literally, it was all like my first. I had it in the corner and obviously eating, drinking, and I'm watching. And yeah, I agree. I think like the second set, I was looking at the score. I was like, to my friend, I was like, fuck, like, we're actually going to lose this. Mm. I was like, damn. And then it just changed completely. I was just like, wait, hold on. What the hell? But like, yeah, no, she killed it. Like, she worked really hard.
That's one thing we've been saying for a long time with Paolini. Like, that is kind of her brand in terms of she's a fighter.
Yeah.
And like, that's pretty much her DNA. That's in her DNA.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing she's added this year, again, which we've said, is like a lot of power. Like, there's a lot of power like now, like in her
from the
strokes.
Moment she was at a United Cup.
Exactly.
I was like, bro, her game is looking different.
Yeah, and it's like her mindset has also changed as well. Like, so there's like a confidence when she's playing against like these top players.
Yeah.
And I said, oh yeah, like she's basically playing like she belongs in the top 30. She's now a top 20 player.
Yeah.
So like, like, so it's like, it's great to see. And like I said to you, Lucy, too, feels personal for us because she's someone we've been championing for a long time.
So
now to see her kind of get the
100%
accolades and like the shine,
which a lot of people were saying to us as well, like a lot of people actually left like comments,
which is
and
beautiful,
saying like, oh yeah, like thanks to the pod or thanks to you guys being able to know about Paolini and stuff. Yeah man, that's how we roll.
What did you make of her run, Tamani?
Yeah, it was like, as you said, in the final she was down the whole time, lost the first set.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, I think, Kellen Sky was up a break in the second set, but she just kept on fighting, kept on just being there.
Mm.
And so, and she just, you know, in the big moments at the end of both second and third sets, she just got it done.
Mm-hmm.
She was the braver one, the one who didn't falter Kellen Sky herself for the title.
Yeah, exactly.
And fumbled. Just crumbled. Yeah. And I think it was just errors.
Yeah,
but again, Paolini was the one who was there, and as you said as well, she's been hitting big. Like I watched a lot of the run and just seeing how big her forehand was, just tearing people apart. Particularly against Kristea, actually, she just dominated a player who would like last year would have dominated her.
Yeah,
and she just stepped up and was just cracking forehands and like fair play. Like,
it's good to see, man.
And it's just cool that she's just gradually improved as well. Like this has been happening for
exactly it's a been few a steady years.
And yeah, this is a big jump, but in a, like it didn't feel like it in terms of just the way she's been playing.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think she can break into the top 10, or is that too much of a...
I mean, she's close enough now.
She's close.
Four spots away.
The thing is, like, it's I was thinking during the tournament, like at the moment in the WTA, like the top five are strong.
Yeah, that's, you know, pretty set.
Yeah, they're very strong.
That's true, that's a good point.
But below, like, 6 to 10
is a
bit,
that's like... That's a great shout.
You have,
as we said, Sakari just falling out, Jabeur's injured and, you know, still, like...
Struggling.
Got that Wimbledon final in her head.
Yeah.
All these players are just kind of not at their best when Drusova still, like, trying to, you know, find her feet after Wimbledon. But, like, if you're consistent and if you're beating... just winning matches and you have a chance.
That is such a great shout.
And now she has like a fat 1,000 points on her ranking for 52 weeks.
That's dope. Yeah. No, you're right.
Because she can't really, she's pretty much safe now in that. My maths is so bad, so I'm not going to try to like figure it out. But yeah, she won't really drop out anytime soon, will she, in terms of the top 20?
No, not with that.
Like, that's huge.
Crazy. Mm-hmm.
That is massive. And, and obviously for Italian tennis as well, like going
I swear
back
she
to...
said as soon as she won, she wanted to take a picture next to, what's her name?
Irani. Irani.
Yeah, because apparently she's the only one who's won, only like female
Italian. She'd won Dubai,
To win that. So she was like literally that was one of the first.
And I think the third really Italian to win a WTA 1000.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was Irani that won Dubai. I don't know what year.
Yeah.
It was years ago.
And is it Panetta? I think she also won a WTA 1000. I don't know where. I think probably the States.
Yeah.
But yeah, now Paolini's part of that, like, clique. That's crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. crazy. But shout out to her, man. Really, that win was, I was so happy. Like, it was really exciting, honestly.
Your tweets about, give me, I want all the eggs.
Shout out to all my Ghanaians out there. I don't know if it's Yenko, but if I'm saying it right, then yeah.
Oh, my God. But yeah, hopefully, like, I'm going to speak it into existence. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Jasmine Paolini on the pod at some point. So she can kind of...
Forza.
See you, Jasmine. But yeah, man, so happy to see that. Staying in Dubai, we have to talk about Coco Gauff.
Mm-hmm.
Time Women of the Year honoree as well for 2024, which is a great look.
Crazy, but yeah.
The kind of moment, unfortunate moment, but then also it just kind of... further showed like how special like Coco Gauff is,
mm-hmm.
as a person and a character. The exchange she had with the umpire Pierre Bachy, I said it was a teachable moment for the umpire. But yeah, let's talk about that. Like, what are our thoughts? Like, where are we? Like, with Pierre?
Well, to give a little bit of context to those who are not really aware, she was playing against Pliskova. She was serving, and then the umpire called it out.
When it was late. In.
When it was, well, not only was just in, but also he called it out like late, like way after like Pliskova's like return. And then.
Because Pliskova, she returned it, but she.
She returned
did
it.
Did she hit it into the net or was it out?
No, I think, I can't remember, but all I know, I think she returned it and it was like a.
I think she missed.
She missed because it was like late. And so like it was meant to be like, you know, because he wanted Coco to like play again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, to play a point.
To play a point. And there was basically a 5-minute argument that was so unnecessary between the umpire and Coco. And Coco was just like, you called it out late and stuff. And then she asked for a supervisor, which she has a right to, and he was being stubborn about it, being very dismissive as well, was basically looking at Coco like she was the idiot. And I don't know, Coco, honestly, and that's what I said even on our Twitter, like, Coco's honestly a better person than me because I would have cussed that man out like crazy because you're telling me, first of all, you're in the wrong, then you're not letting me see any supervisor, which I have the right to, and now you're talking to me like I'm a dickhead. Like, can we actually stop? And yeah, you could see she was even on the verge, like she was basically crying. She was basically crying, and like literally for 5 minutes, wasted 5 minutes of everyone's time going through that, while also Pliskova, bear in mind, was just there, just giggling and laughing.
I think she took
a seat
at one point as well.
She was like, and it's like, you know what's going on. And which to me is like, it's unfortunate because Pliskova is a player who regularly has issues with umpires. So you know how it is. Like, she's always, Pliskova is a very, she's not like the quiet type of person. If there's an issue, she would speak out. But yeah, all of that was happening. Coco got it together and then went and finished her match and she actually won. She used all that anger into it. And again, it showed, I've been saying it for such a long time that I feel like Coco has improved so much. Like, her maturity has really been showing. And I also said that that's all she needed for her to get better, even as a player, because I feel like the old Coco, that would have got into her head and then she would have probably like messed up that match.
Which would have been understandable.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But honestly, in that situation, that peer guy, I bet you any money, nothing has happened to him. No one has raised any complaint. Nothing has happened.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was umpiring today, actually.
He was umpiring that same, literally a day or two after, even at that time. And also, I want to know, where the heck was the supervisor? Because I'm pretty sure the supervisor saw all of that. Why did it not come out?
Do you think Pliskova could have done something in that, in terms of like, just said to Coco, yeah, have the point?
Pliskova could have 100% did it, but unfortunately, we have an issue with the WTA where there's no sense of like, no one really fucks with each other like that. Because a lot of them don't.
I didn't want to say it, Lucy, but
it's facts.
Basically, yeah.
That's what it is.
I would think if that was on the men's side,
if it was on the men's side, 100%. I'm so sorry, guys. Depending on who it is, if it's like Medvedev and I don't know, Tsitsipas, then maybe. Not. Do you get what I mean? But I'm so certain. So certain if it was like male players, depending on who, it would have probably happened. But even with the WTA players, for example, if it was Osaka, she probably would have told her like, yeah, just it's calm, like have the point. Mm. But something like that, you would never, I feel like you won't really get a WTA, but you don't really agree.
No, I agree. The thing is, I like the competitiveness on the WTA, and yeah, and sometimes on the ATP it goes the other way where they're too pally and it's too much.
Oh, you guys, but, man.
But in this instance, yeah, for sure. Like, mm-hmm, there's so many players I can think of who would have just been like, yeah,
it I've was seen
like,
it exactly.
Yeah. We've seen it many times, and so I don't think it's down to the player to be, you know, true, making the call.
Mm. That's true. That's a good
but
point.
She could have, you know, she clearly could have just been
because
like,
it wasted both of their time.
And exactly, and clearly she knew that she'd hit the ball late. That the call came after she hit it.
Exactly.
So 100%. Yeah, and in terms of the argument, I just can't ever remember really seeing an umpire refusing to let the supervisor out. You'll see like players do dumb stupid things, but you know, like getting a point penalty. Kyrgios making drama, and the demand the supervisor, and it's obvious that the supervisor's just gonna, you know, copy what the umpire says, and they're not gonna change anything. But still, they'll come out.
Yeah.
And in this sense, he just kept on denying it to her, and you could tell how frustrated she was.
It's really weird to think like why did he refuse? Yeah. Like refuse?
I feel like there's two reasons. There was either like one, where he knew he probably clocked like, fucked up here. Or two, is just a typical like, who the hell are you? Like, no, you're not seeing the supervisor. Like, I'm not like trying to like baby her, like small girl her. Do you get what I mean? And like, I don't know. I feel like it's one of those two, in all honesty. I feel like it's one of those two. And yeah. And I mean, I don't want to say it, but
say it, Lucy, man.
When you're black, the rules changes a little bit. It moves different. People like it or not. And it's so funny because when that happened, there's some people, obviously on Twitter, that was getting upset and stuff. And it was like, bro, some of us even really bring up race. You're the one who even brought it up. So you even know that it's actually like an issue. Mm. Do you get what I mean? There's always like, I'm not saying no other player would have, like, I'm not saying that other players wouldn't deal with that. They would have dealt with it. But I don't know. As a black woman, when I watched that and I saw how he was talking to her, it was like, I know that look.
It hit.
I know that look. I know that tone when it's like, listen, you're a little black girl. Don't chat to me. Don't tell me how to do my job. This is my job. This is how it's meant to be. But it doesn't matter anyway, because at the end of the day, my girl won that match. She got it together. Shout out to her dad who did like a beautiful post on his IG. It was really, really, really nice. And shout out to Coco for holding it together, because like I said, if it was me, would have still been standing in that court till I saw that supervisor. I would have gone crazy. Like, she's so mature, so respectful. And that is why she got that timed woman shit. Mm. That is exactly why she got it, because she is that person. She's doing it.
She's
so
that girl.
Yeah, man. And Pierre, if I catch you outside, it's not gonna be nice, bro. It's not gonna be nice. I'm not a player.
More accolades for Coco as well. So she's also been nominated for Laureus Breakthrough of the Year alongside Jude Bellingham, like one of the greatest footballers on earth right now. Mm. But yeah, it just shows like everything you just said, Lucy, and you, Tamani, too, like just where she's at, like right now, as a 19-year-old,
mm-hmm,
like she's 20 in March, so she'll soon be 20 years old, but she's literally been growing up like in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
And like you said, Lucy, like she's been maturing like year after year.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just mostly impressed with like just how graceful she was like in that moment, because mm-hmm, it was tough to watch.
No, 100%.
And she was in tears.
She was, yeah.
But she held it together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, used it as fuel to help her win the match.
Yep.
So it was great to see.
Honestly.
It was really, really good to
see.
So
to Coco,
yeah, shouts out to Coco all the time, man. Naomi Osaka, so she reached the quarterfinals in Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
I said she looked really impressive against Caroline Garcia in that first round win.
Yeah.
And then she beat Petra Martic in the mm-hmm second round, and then lost to Pliskova in the quarterfinals. Where are we with like Osaka? Like I feel like she's had a good run in terms of this, like there's a name for it.
return?
As in the swing.
Oh.
Out of Middle East.
Middle East and swing. Sorry about that, guys. But yeah, I feel like it's been a good like couple of weeks for Osaka. Like, what are our thoughts?
Yeah, I thought she obviously she'd come into this swing having lost, I think, three of her first four matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just still, you know, trying to get her feet back and, you know, find a rhythm and all of that stuff that's normal after being away for so long and having a baby. But it was really a big step forward, I thought, in Qatar. After actually in Abu Dhabi, which was just
Daniel Collins she lost to.
That was bad. Not because she lost to Collins, but because I think she lost the last 9 games of the match.
And Bagel's
second serve. Yeah. I'm sure she wasn't feeling good about herself. But the good thing is that after that, when she was speaking to the press in Qatar, she was saying, she kind of acknowledged that she just needs to, you know, keep on moving forward, not getting upset, understanding that it's going to take a lot of work. And then she came to Qatar and played a great match against Garcia, hitting the ball really well, serving really well, and then backed it up, which was good as well, against Matic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Straight sets win. Mm-hmm. And even against Pliskova, I thought she played quite well against
Pliskova. Yeah, she did. Exactly. Yeah. She played like a complete different like level.
Yeah.
Both with Pliskova and both with Garcia, obviously, which she did beat anyways. But honestly, like I said in the pod, like, I'm not expecting like anything crazy. She's done well. She's done what she had to do. She even played a couple more matches. Like, obviously, it was only one round with doubles with Ons. It was nice seeing that, which was like, because that was the first ever time she's played double with someone else aside from like her sister. But that was even like years ago.
Crazy.
But yeah, honestly, like there was a lot of talk when they found out that she pulled out of Dubai. Like, people were going like crazy, and I was just like, guys, she is a mom. I even wrote M-O-M.
Mom.
So that it can stick to you guys' head. Because I do not understand, why are we arguing over a mom leaving a tournament, you know, to go, you know, you don't even know what's going on. Do you get what I mean? Like, we really don't know like why she even did it. It could have been anything else. But at the same time, it's like, you know, she's did what she's got to do. And yeah, she's going to be like, I feel like she's played like enough, like, I mean, yes, as a fan, was what I'll allow for her to play more matches, but I feel like with everything that she's been doing so far, it's like, we're going to get there.
Yeah.
It's not going to be now though. And I don't even want it to be now, to be very honest, because then it's just too much pressure and then people are going to be talking like way too much.
Because on that, and Tamani, you can probably help us here. Like, she does seem, from the things I've read, from like her interviews, she does seem a lot more just relaxed, so she's not putting as much pressure like on herself. Like, is that something you kind of seen as well?
Sure, I think she realizes that it's going to take a long time, and that, you know, she has to be consistent and it's, you know, just, I mean, in terms of her work and just her mentality and not getting upset when she has a, you know, an early loss. Or I think she knows that. Well, she's said like quite a few times, I'm aiming to like be playing at a high level by the end of the season, at the second half of the season. So yeah, I think it's going. She's about where you'd hope she'd be.
Exactly.
And you can clearly see the progress, and I think it's good. She also just seems in general like in a good place. Mm-hmm. She just seems happier, and yeah, and I agree with you about the. I saw like the criticism of her withdrawing from Dubai.
It's crazy. And it's
like, yeah, she has a 7-8 month old.
Bro, that baby cannot even crawl. Like, relax.
And she's been away like already a lot.
Yeah.
She's away, what, for
whole different time zone, whole different.
3 weeks in Jan, almost, you know, 2.5 weeks this month. So.
I think she says she's been like FaceTiming, but that's pretty much.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think both of them, when I say both, I'm talking about her and because Corday was also on tour. Obviously, I'm actually like a fan. Obviously, I follow him on social, but he was also on tour in Australia during the time where she was in the Middle East. So it's like, most likely, none of them were with their child, so that the child's like alone, like not alone, but like, we know, with family and stuff. So do you get what I mean? Like, it's all of these things, but people don't like consider that. But it is what it is. I'm happy about, you know, Osaka. I'm just happy that she's back and she's doing whatever she wants. And anyways, the people are going to talk. But when she's winning, they're not talking. Because I asked you guys, where were you? Because when she was winning, when she beat Garcia, I asked you, come on, make some noise. They were quiet. Next match, they were quiet again. The match, they were quiet. Like, you guys were not talking. She says
about NO top on.
Exactly. We're not in a top on, okay? Understand, this is a Naomi Osaka stan account.
Let's go. Yeah, shout out to Naomi Osaka every time.
For real.
Get them on feast now.
Actually, wait. Before we go to the women, or go to the men, sorry, I do want to give a shout out to Heather Watson, though. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, go for it.
Because she's been grinding a little, you know.
It's funny because Tamani, he was at Hampton watching her.
Oh, did you see her?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Look at this.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Unscripted.
Guys, what can I say? I'm a journalist.
Go on.
No, but she had like very like tough draws for like, what's it like? Abu Dhabi, sorry. So like she went through qualifying.
Yeah.
First round, she had Kenin, which was like three sets. Then she had Masarova, three sets as well. And they were both like really like tough matches. These are the type of matches where I wish I'm like, damn, we actually could have watched this. Luckily, the tennis gods heard our prayers and Ostapenko pulled out, but that was going to be her first round. But that was that. It just shows to you how much like it was going to be like really, really tough. Like, can you imagine like Kenin, Masarova, Ostapenko?
To get Kenin first round quaddies, that's crazy.
That's crazy. That's what Grand I'm saying. And that's what I'm saying. And hence why I went through them three sets and she killed it and she went through. And then she had, Kudermetova as well. Then she lost in a round 16 to Bookshaw,
Caroline Butcher. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But honestly, yes, one of them too. But either way, she was doing
butchering
like
that name. Sorry.
Yes, yeah, I told you. This is why I don't like to say it. But even like in doubles, even there as well, she got all the way to the finals with Noshkova, which funny enough, she then lost to Kenin and her partner, Sands, as well. But even now, recently, she was actually also in a 125 final. But she lost to
Was that Roehampton?
No, that was a different.
That was a different one, Sunderland.
Oh, Sunderland. Okay.
Yeah.
And then she made the final in Roehampton as well.
Oh, she made the final in Roehampton as well. Yeah.
She lost to, I think, Lulu Sun,
I think so. Something. I'm not too sure. Yeah. But it just shows to you that, you know, she's been silently grinding out there. So shout out to Heather Watson. See you doing it, because I get like a lot of like the pop-ups of her matches and stuff.
That's nice.
So,
I like that. That's
yeah,
very,
that
very
was
nice.
really, really good,
shows as well, like in terms of what match wins like does.
Yeah.
Because like no matter what level, like when you kind of get in a run of winning matches, it's a nice feeling and it can kind of breed more wins.
Yeah.
So
100%.
And I was saying, I watched her when she at Roehampton. It must have been like quarterfinal or maybe second round. And obviously it was like a 40k, so lower level. She was clearly the, you know, she was the highest ranked player. But it was just actually just interesting to see her against a lower ranked player and just to see how good
she is.
Because they're talented players. The opponent she was playing, I forgot her name, but Australian girl who was young player as well, who hit big and was, you know, taking her game to her. But you could just see how easily she like absorbed all the pace and was just redirecting everything. And you see like when like a top 100 player drops down, you really see how good they are when they play against the lower player. And I know, I was just really impressed with her.
No, that's really cool.
And then I told you, I saw her, she finished her match, she won, and then she got a line back.
No way!
I was driving out of the National Tennis Center and she was like getting her line back. You know?
Oh, that is so dope.
So London. Love that.
Hey, speaking of you linebacker people, yeah, park your things properly. Except you, Heather Watson. You're great vibes. But everyone else, yeah, I'm tired of seeing your linebacks everywhere on my road.
America's thinking, what the hell? Like, so do you want to explain
do they have linebacks?
I'm pretty sure they have those street bikes.
Yeah.
So basically, they're just basically pedal bikes, but that you pay for.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
I don't really have to really explain.
Is that, okay, if you know Zipcar, is that Zipcar for bikes? Is there a Zipcar in America? But if not, it's basically you can rent a bike by just using the app and then ride it and then you get charged. But yeah,
But people just leave them everywhere.
In the middle of the road. I'm just like,
unruly. Unruly. But I like that Heather Watson interjection. So
yeah, shout out to
appreciate
her.
That, Lucy. And thanks to Moni as well for that insight.
Yeah, and the linebacks. Linebacks.
So yeah, on to the men now. Gael Monfils, what a week he had. Reaching the semis in Doha at 37 years old. So he now becomes the oldest Doha semi-finalist. And he's won that tournament before as well. I think I did tweet about it. Every time he's played Doha, he's at least reached the quarterfinals or better. So it's a pretty good record.
Hmm.
And he ended up losing to Jakub Mensik, the 18-year-old, I want to say he's 18.
Yep.
From the Czech Republic, who ended up finishing runner up. But yeah, it's just good seeing Monfils like still competing, man, like beating players that really and truly, like, I mean, so that run in Doha, he beat Zheng Zhizheng. That's it. Thank you. This is why Tamani's here. He's a good player too.
Triple Z,
exactly. So he's someone that's been, kind of been spoken about a lot actually recently to say, oh yeah, he's like the next kind of guy to look out for.
Mm.
Monfils took him out in 3 sets. The match I was most impressed with in Doha was against Hugo Humbert.
Yeah, Hugo Humbert.
Because
that
was a straight sets win. Mm-hmm. And Humbert's top 20.
Mm-hmm. Playing very
French
well.
Number one. Yeah. Exactly. Recently won a tournament a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Monfils lost to Humbert.
the day we recorded. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, even against Mensik.
But even that was like 3 sets anyways.
Yeah, yeah. He won the first set. And I think he was struggling physically.
Okay.
There was some kind of injury he was kind of dealing with. But yeah, just to finish up on Monfils for me anyway, I'm just happy to see him playing and competing like at this level, because I'm not going to lie to you, I was scared thinking, you know what, it's probably the end like soon. In terms of him being...
Yeah, I generally thought by now he would actually would have retired, especially with
now how he's a dad. Things are
going. Yeah. I think he probably got a little bit more motivation after he won his title like last year.
The last quarter.
I think that gave him a little boost. And I also think he's... I don't want to say surprisingly. I don't know what word to use, but recently, last couple months, like, a lot of people on social media have been sharing videos of Monfils, like his shots and his a lot. And I remember I even saw someone posting on their story was like, oh, now everyone's talking about Monfils. Like, where were you guys all these years? Like, you guys are literally late to the party. Like, there was a time where this was what he was doing on a daily basis. So I think all of those things as well, like helping him and, you know, just making him fall in love with the game again. So I think a lot of those different stuff. So you're winning a title, you know, you have more of a purpose now with your child and your wife is also doing well and all these type of things. So I think his environment is kind of like, because he has changed, that kind of helped him, because at the time where he was really low was around like COVID, because he was one of the players where you could see that COVID 100% affected his, yeah. Because right before that, he was winning back to back. Like, he was playing really well. Then boom, COVID hit. And then after that, he just was not the same. And then he gets married, he has a child. And, you know, a lot of things changes. So I think some of the stuff like around him that are happening are kind of like evolving, like helping him like a lot of his game. And also you need to keep in mind, like you said, he's literally like in his late 30s, mid 30s. Like, he knows time will be there. Yeah. So he's trying to, you know, enjoy it, because there's going to be a time where he's going to be the one coming to like these tournaments, but only to watch his wife. He's not really going to be playing anything. Do you get what I mean? But I'm happy that he's, you know, playing, entertaining and enjoying the game and stuff. And that's all that matters. I mean, for him to reach all the way to that semi-final, that's amazing. And beating big players as well. Exactly. That's the thing. He still has the ability to beat like certain players who, you know, they're probably like tough to beat at anyways.
Tamani, your thoughts on
LeBron? Yeah, I agree with everything Lucy said, but also it's not every single week. Like, obviously today he lost a tough match, but he's playing at a high level. He's moving really well still hitting the ball well. Like, it's just fun to see him still playing good tennis. And to me, it seems like he's more than capable of having a big run here or there in the Masters, maybe, you know, Roland Garros run, one last. I think he's capable of it.
I love
and
that.
It's funny because, like, he started so young. He was, you know, one of the best juniors ever. He won three majors. Yeah, he won three majors.
World number one junior.
And then Murray won the last one that year, I think. So he's been going for so long, but he's still here. And I think the way he's going, he's going to be the oldest player in the top 50.
Crazy.
Which is mad.
Because he's older than Murray, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He's mm-hmm. older than Murray, older that's than Djokovic. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. So,
but yeah, it's again, I think he's capable of doing maybe one more big result, one more big run at least.
He's one of those players as well. Like, even though he's like, yeah, of an age, like, guys aren't going to want to see him.
Yeah,
like, yeah, exactly.
do you get me? Yeah, so yeah, I just think that's just huge. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just enjoy, let's enjoy him while he's still here, basically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, it was cool. So when he lost to Mensik, like, gave him a hug and was like,
"Nice moment." Oh,
he was like, "I looked up to you. I watched you when I was younger."
Oh, yeah.
And you've seen that quite a bit. You saw, I think, I feel like Draper did that.
TFO's obviously
year.
Done it.
Yeah, yeah. And he's not a slam champion. He's not one of the. He's been surpassed by, you know, the big three, whatever. Mm. But he's had a big impact on players in general, on black players. Completely. Clearly, mm-hmm. he's been, you know. He's been the player that so many people looked up to, him and Songa as well.
Yeah.
So it's just cool to see him, people giving him his flowers in a way, and
while he's still exactly still playing. Still playing.
And yeah, he's just all he's done in terms of you know the way he's entertained players,
exactly,
entertained fans.
Good
and
fans, yeah.
Did you see what he was doing today? Impact. Actually, he was doing double signs.
Yeah,
I didn't even see it.
I don't know who it was. I think it was just to a fan in the crowd. I don't think it was his camp, but during the Umber match, where are they playing? Is it Dubai? Is Dubai they're playing?
Dubai. Yeah.
Yeah, he was doing the doubles like tactics, which I just thought was hilarious. I retweeted it on X, not Twitter. But yeah, it's cool to see him just having fun as well.
That's the thing,
also still playing
exactly,
at a high level. Because that is his personality. Yeah. Like, so yeah, man.
Yeah.
Shouts out to Monfils, Le Monf. Another Frenchman.
Arthur Fils.
Arthur.
Oh, he cut his hair, by the way.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
I like it.
Arthur. So he's playing.
French, they loving feast at the moment as well. So yeah, like I'm desperate to actually know what made him go there, because I didn't expect it. I was honestly surprised, because I know he likes hardcore, and you can, he's great at it as well, especially indoor hardcore. So when I saw he was there, I was like, what are we doing? I was like, more of like, I
just think he's gone for the experience, honestly, and he doesn't have to do it next year. Like, yeah, it, for me, and we'll talk about it maybe a bit later on as well. Mm. That South American swing is mm-hmm. for South American players. Mm-hmm. So the draws are always stacked of like Argentinians, yeah. Brazilians, yeah. and like Chileans, guys from that region, basically. Mm-hmm. You don't really get that many Europeans going mm-hmm. over there, because mm-hmm. they're mainly in, yeah, doing the indoor circuit, like you said. Mm-hmm. Or like, yeah, now.
But he does like clay, though.
And this is what I'm
That's
saying.
That's another thing as well. He does like clay. He has a tie on clay. Which he won last year. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just like a preference for me. He's just like, yeah, I'll just prefer going there rather than going to the Middle East.
So Marnie, what are your thoughts?
Sorry. I'm just waiting to call. I mean, for me, clay is a great surface for character building. It's for like, you know, he's an aggressive player. He likes to attack. Clay forces you to construct points. And I think for a player who's growing, that's always good if you spend more time on it. Exactly. Also, it's the surface where there's a slam. And as you said, in the Olympics this year, there ain't no indoor slam. So
yeah, true.
Like, I'm not against it.
No, it's your Olympic shout, though, is the one. That's the clear winner. Like,
okay.
You're right, yeah. And okay. I mean, he has Olympics and, of course, French Open as well.
So I doubt he'll be playing South America next year, basically. But we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, it's also just it's just tough to go there facing, again, Argentine, South American mm-hmm. Grinders, mm-hmm. clay, you know, people who know clay inside out, and true. To get that experience. I think it's, even though he hasn't done as well as he wanted to,
mm-hmm.
it's, hopefully, I think it's
that,
always, it's
that could change. That could change in Chile this week.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Did you guys see what Andy Murray said about the Golden Swing should have?
Yeah.
Andy Murray has been doing a lot of talking. Yeah. He's been doing a lot of talking.
So I don't have his tweet up, like, yeah, so I can't say it like verbatim, but he basically said that the Brazilian, the South American, or in the calendar, there should be a Golden Swing, yeah. basically, or a place in the calendar for like South American tournaments and a Master Series. Where are you guys on that?
I mean, to be fair, I think he said that just in South America, he didn't necessarily say like on clay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know? Wait, hold on. So he said, unpopular opinion, sorry. South America should have its own dedicated swing on the tennis tour with its own Master Series. The way the fans support the tournament there is incredible, which I really agree with. Amazing atmospheres, and tennis is clearly part of their sporting culture. I agree with that. I think one thing that I've noticed with a lot of the tournaments around that side is that they, but I feel like that's just them in terms of sport in general.
Yeah, they love it.
Football, whatever it is, whatever sport it is, they're going to go like, you know, ham about it. But
Tamani, you go.
I'm like, I don't mind it. I get where it's coming from, but it's like, where are we going to put it?
We already have
a calendar issue, and we have a calendar issue with what we have right now. You want to add another
just
one?
Just wanted to throw that bomb, bang.
Yeah, it's like, where do you want it to go? That's my only thing. Like, we're already having discussions about grass season's not enough, or the calendar's too long, or this and that. Mm. And then boom.
Because that's my thing. I'm not against it, but then at the same time, it would be a bit mad if we had like a Golden Swing and then like a Masters event there, but then we've got no grass court Masters. Like,
yeah,
that's true. That's true.
We need to have a grass court Masters event, 1,000.
Yeah,
men and women. Like, facts. So yeah, Tamani, where are you?
I think the reason I said that before is because I think it's either you have the Golden Swing as it is now, but if there was to be a 1,000, it would have to be on hard, in my opinion. I don't think you could really...
As in South America?
In South America, in Feb, if it was in this part of the year, it would. I think it would have to be on hard courts. But Why not? I mean...
Oh, okay, it makes sense.
I don't think that's... The majority of players are interested in playing in clay, on clay at this point of the year.
That's true.
Even like when they, you know... As much as we just said that it's tough, and there's a lot of tough players there who know Clay. At the same time, you look at the draws in the Golden Swing, and you know there's opportunity. There's a reason why.
Respectfully,
yeah.
No, but
like,
it's true.
There's a reason why, like, you know, last year Norrie's been like, I think it's been cool to see him give it a go, and you know he was there. He was more successful last year when he reached the Buenos Aires final and then won Rio. This year he's less so, but there's opportunity when you're playing against often players outside the top 50.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't think there would be a Clay 1000 in February, but you know, again, it would have to be. I think it would have to be on hard.
All I'm saying is, Andy Murray, since you have that opinion, give us an example of when you want this to happen. How you want this, like, to happen? Because even now, like, I don't even think it's even going to happen. Especially that, for example, the tournaments in the Middle East, they changed up. Dubai was in 1,000 before the one that Paolini won. It wasn't 1,000 before. I think it was 500 or 250 or something like that.
Dubai, as in what Paolini.
Yeah, there was what? No, there's one. Or is it the ATP one? That's
The ATP.
Sorry, it's the ATP. Yeah.
ATP. Is
no, one of them moved to 1,000. Or is it the Abu Dhabi?
Oh no! So Dubai and Qatar are both 1,000.
But
the
before one of them were.
Before they just like alternated.
But still, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. But it's like when they're doing all these type of things and investing in other places, I don't see it happening.
Well, I mean, I'd say maybe get rid of Miami at this point. That would be my hot take. The US already have four
masters right now. Why is edit that one out?
They're putting Miami in a football stadium.
Miami and Dolphins.
A parking lot.
I think I like it though. Shout out to James Blake as well, tournament director.
I was waiting for him to say that. But when you see the court, it's beautiful. When you zoom out, and then you see that they just basically just boom, just put it there. It's a ghetto. It's Miami.
Guys, I do not co-sign anything these two have just said. But anyway.
Oh my God. No, but let's keep it real.
Yeah, no, I like Miami.
I liked it before.
I liked it before.
It's the old venue.
I like Miami, man. I like old and
new. Yeah, I agree. No, I like the old one. Like the new one, I don't know.
So yeah, same with the men. Felix Ojeleyasim, I think it's important to give him a shout out. So he's not had the best start to the year, as we've kind of established as well.
Mm.
But he's starting to pick up results. So he reached the Montpellier semi-finals. I think he lost to Bublik there. But he had a, I say, good run. He in Rotterdam, he beat Maxim Cressy in the first round.
Yeah.
And then lost to Andrei Rublev in, it was straight sets, but it was
three
tight.
Sets.
Is it three?
Yeah, three sets.
Of course it was.
He had match points, right?
Yeah, he had match points. So it was three sets.
It was three sets.
But watching that match, I was like, we're starting to see the Felix of old, in terms of,
I don't think just along with that match. I think the matches that he's been playing since he's been back this season too.
But the Rublev one, because he had match points in that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, if he can win this match, he's back.
Yeah.
But obviously he didn't win. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I still took away a lot of positives like from the performance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you guys are like with Felix.
Yeah, I think I agree. I feel like he's slowly getting there.
He did lose actually on Monday night in Acapulco to Flavio Cavoli. Good player, Italian.
I think you can see that he really wants it now. Like he's been grinding and stuff. Like he's super like focused and everything. I think he just needs to keep on playing. I'm glad that he's playing more like matches.
Yeah.
Because we need to remember, it's not like he lost. Like it's not like he was in. How can I explain it? He was injured for a hot moment last year. And I kind of feel like a lot of people forgetting that. Like we were just saying, oh yeah, he just like flopped. And it's like, it's not like he flopped. He was literally bloody injured. And then he took him, you know, and sometimes every time he thinks he was okay, it was actually like hurting him a bit.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of the year, that's when he got his rhythm. And then he won a title there, you know, he was playing. And that's why I feel like he was playing a little bit more and everything. And that's why now he's playing a lot more of these tournaments. Some of these tournaments that he's playing, normally Felix wouldn't play that.
Mm.
like even the one that he just lost Monday, normally he would have
played. Acapulco he would have played because it's a 500. And Rotterdam, he won.
I remember that, yeah. But still, but like he's been, but either way, he's been playing a lot more matches and you can see that he's trying to get like his rhythm back. And I personally think that once it's clay season, I think Sunshine Double might be a bit tough for him, but I think clay season, he'll be back on form.
Where do you see Felix? Did you see any of him in Australia?
Bits, yeah.
Because he played team first round.
Yeah.
Did you watch that match? Or
yeah,
you know,
bits,
yeah,
bits of
a long one.
Yeah, that was a long one, yeah.
But yeah, where are you in terms of like his overall game like this year so far?
He's clearly like more confident and comfortable indoors, which has always suited his game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's always plays well indoors.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's still just kind of searching for that confidence and, you know, the match toughness. And
that's true.
I think it will come again eventually, but... I mean, it's been up and down, and I actually think maybe by the grass season it will be
more
this
time.
More time.
Fairs. I like that.
Fairs.
But yeah, it's been tough, and as you said, just the injuries stopping and starting.
Mm-hmm.
I think he lost during that period, he just lost a ton of confidence in his game and in himself. And yeah,
it's been tough to see, definitely. It really has, especially when you see like someone like Jannik Sinner win a slam. Mm. Like they are similar level, like at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like now Sinner's overtaken that because he's now a Grand Slam champion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I still believe Felix can get to that level.
Yeah.
Obviously it's going to take him a while now.
Yeah.
I think he's just still just inside the top 30. I want to say he's 30 at the moment. But yeah, he's got work to do. But it looks like it's slowly coming.
It's slowly coming, yeah. But you can tell that it's got to him.
100%.
Because even like his, like, the way like he is, like when you see him even on court, like even like the post-match interviews, like it's just the energy feels a bit different, which is, it makes perfect sense. Like, you know, you're out here winning titles like crazy and then you get injured and then he barely played last season. Like it was just, you know.
And yeah, it's funny when we're talking about Feast, it made me think of Felix back when he burst onto the tour and when he was 19 and he went and did the Golden Swing. That's where he had his first
the final.
Yeah, exactly. Played Jerry.
That's where I found him. I was like, who the hell is this kid? With the high top.
Yeah.
I love the service motion. And then that's where he exploded.
And but back then he was the golden child. He was the one
youngest one to do this, that, and the other.
Exactly. And it must be tough just seeing the player, just not just Sinner, but numerous players.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Got surpass you and achieve the goals that you were hoping to achieve. It should be motivating as well.
Exactly.
And it should be, you know, it should just give him more fight, and I'm curious to see just how it goes with his team as well. How long?
A lot of people have been saying the team needs to chill. There needs to be some change in the team. I don't like to talk about that.
You don't like to talk about that, but I'm going to talk about it. Uncle Tony Nadal, get the heck out of here, respectfully.
But what about the French?
I do not get it. So
Frederick
what?
Fontaine and
who
is his current?
I'm not talking about the whole team.
Yeah.
Take everyone out one by one. One by one. But first, Uncle Tony Nadal, get out. Go to your nephew. He's about to get out soon. Go spend some time with him in tennis.
I co-sign that, you know. I'm not gonna lie.
He can go for we can handle the rest.
I co-sign.
But Uncle Tony Nadal, get the heck out of here. Respectfully.
I co-sign.
Shout out to Nadal.
he's in the New Worlds at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he'll be back, Rafa. Before we finish up, Francis Tiafoe, I want to give him a shout out too. So he reached the semi-finals in Delray, a tournament he actually won. That was his first ATP Tour title. But you can see again with him, similar to Felix, like he's still building in terms of confidence because his team changed. So he's now with Diego Maiano, like we said on the previous pod.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see there are like kind of signs that like
it's a
new situation and like he's still getting used to that.
Yeah, because even when he played at Hong Kong, I felt like his game was a bit different. Like he was playing a like more aggressive.
You think so?
Yeah, but then it's weird. I kind of feel like Diego was trying to introduce him to like a new like playing style, like some little new like tactics. And Tiafoe is kind of like dipping in and out of that because the way he played at Hong Kong and then the way he played at Australia Open was kind of different. But I think gradually they'll get to a place where it's like, okay, things are like making sense.
It was interesting because I think it was before Del Rey. I think it was Houston. Is Houston the indoor tournament before? Before Del Rey.
Was he?
But he was talking there about like how his diet's changed. Like that's something he's got like a nutritionist that's like switched up his diet. Mm. So like he's still getting used to that as well. And it's like small little things.
Yeah, Dallas. Yeah.
Dallas, that's it. Sorry, Dallas. My bad. But like small little things like that, it could have an effect like on performance and just like routine.
Yeah, basically. I think there's a lot of new things that are happening, changing. And then he's like getting to that place. But yeah.
Did you see him in Australia?
I saw bits of his first match against Djokovic.
Oh, what a match that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought the level was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I still feel Francis is going to basically live up to or get back to the top 10 because obviously he got there last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's just inside the top 15 at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows like that there's more to come basically. And I believe that. Tamani, you don't know if you have anything.
Yeah, there. Of course there's more to come. I think we've discussed this before, I think, but just going from being the underdog to being top 10 player, exactly. All eyes on you. I think he's probably still been adjusting to that and probably it's not easy.
Especially as an American as well.
Yeah, he's no longer going into the match as, just kind of punching up.
Yeah. He's another one of the top seeds. Yeah,
he's now the one people are chasing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's not played as freely as, a lot of the times in recent months this year. And that's maybe why he felt he needed a change and, to switch up his team.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he'll...
I feel like, not to kind of linger on Tiafoe, our guy, but like, yeah, I feel like that's also brave to like switch it up, considering like people would argue, oh, why would you change something that's like successful? But there's also like bravery in that as well.
Mm.
So...
I don't know. I think the timing of the change was good enough. I don't think it was too... I don't know.
Because people are saying, oh, like, why would you want to change? Like, you literally reached your highest ranking with this coach.
Yeah.
So, like, why do you want to all of a sudden change that? But, I mean...
We'll see how it goes, Diego. And plus, Diego's not that bad.
And yeah, they've worked together when he was a teenager.
Yeah, like
when
they true. Were,
I think he was at the USTA, I think. So...
Did you see what he said about his meeting Steph Curry? I'm sure you must have seen that.
Was that on Breakpoint?
Maybe, yeah. I can't remember. Yeah, it might have been. But wait, he said that he met Steph and Steph was like, work hard, still coming to basketball games or something like that.
But
it was also funny. Like, I think he took it as just seeing how many people are rooting for
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's a perfect example of what you just said earlier is like, is no more just Francis Tiafoe going on court. It's Francis Tiafoe and all these fans and American
expecting
fans and
this
expectation. Mm. And, especially that, how Americans are with their sport. They don't joke about it. When there's one that goes up,
How do we feel about his comments about tennis being the hardest sport in the world? Because I agree. Controversial.
I think it's up there. It's obviously just very, in terms of, it being a technical sport, physical sport, endurance, speed, you need everything basically.
On your own.
Yeah, on your own.
Different time zones.
Traveling around.
He also said there's no time in terms of, it's not a time sport. So like,
yeah.
You can be have playing a match for hours. That's 1 hour. You can have a match that's 5 hours. So yeah, I feel it's kind of hard to say that depending because we don't know how every sport is. But I would definitely put it on like one of the
my
top,
only thing
toughest
is I wouldn't com- I wouldn't put like a combat sport. I wouldn't compare it to a combat sport. I don't like combat sports personally.
Yeah.
But I would compare football and tennis quite.
Yeah, that's up. Yeah, even like with just generic sport, but I still feel like I would still put it at least like the top three, like definitely like one of the toughest, 100%.
Because it's like a lot of people are saying, oh, like it can't be
Yeah, some it was like there was people, a lot of like mixed disgusted. Thing. Even I mean, even yeah. some tennis fans were just saying like, no, it's not as fun. And it's just like, bro,
I'm tough as hell
yeah. because you have to have so many different skills.
And mental too, boy.
That's the thing. And mental alone is a lot. And like you say, like you're alone on there, you don't have a team.
Crazy.
And you have to, you know, figure it out.
Yeah. I do think there are a lot of like tennis is, I mean, as we said, tennis is very is one of the tougher sports, but I also find it hard to compare with other sports because there are a lot of difficult sports.
No, there are.
I write a bit about gymnastics, and that is a mad, insane sport.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's up there for sure.
100%. Yeah.
And people coming in saying like, "Oh, baseball's harder." You saw that like Ben Shelton jumped into like it was posted on Instagram.
And someone was like,
"Oh, well, you know, in baseball you have to field like a." I don't know, like a 90 mile an hour, you know, was it boat? I don't even know what it
is. Don't come at us.
We are in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, we're in the UK.
That sport does not exist here.
We do cricket over here, but we don't do cricket, but yeah.
But yeah, someone was saying that and Charlton jumped in and was like, well, you have to return like 147 serves here, 147 mile an hour serves. But the funny thing is that's only like 5% of tennis, right? There's so much more to it. So I think there are definitely other like very difficult sports that are up there as well. Mm. But tennis is up there, has no to doubt. Be,
100%.
Yeah.
And we're not biased. But yeah, before we wrap up, let's just talk about like what's happening now. So we've got on the women's side, we've got Austin, Texas, the ATX Open, which is a WTA 250. So Sloane Stephens is the second seed there.
By the way, she won her match and she bageled on the second set.
Let's go. So she beat Teresa Martinkova.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Townsend also winner today.
Mm-hmm.
So she came back from a set down.
Yep.
Against Fernanda Contreras.
Yes. 3-6, 6-2, 6-3.
Unfortunate loss for Alicia Parks.
Yes.
Against Emiliano Arango. It's a very jammy, I say jammy, that's a really disrespectful term. But like she's had some big wins, Arango. Like she beat Stevens last year and Potapova. But yeah, she's just one of those players that she's tricky. And she's like just outside the top 100. So I think she's like 120, 130. Mm. And yeah, Sasha Vickery, shouts out to her, she qualified. So she plays Rebecca Marino in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not been played yet. And in Acapulco, which is an ATP 500, we've got Francis Tiafoe, who's the eighth seed there. He takes on Max Purcell in the first round. Ben Shelton's also playing. He's not seeded. He did get a good win against
Dan Evans.
I actually
fell asleep after the first set.
It was a great match.
He lost, but then when I woke up and I saw the certificate, I was like, oh,
great match. So yeah, he's now got Al Naldi in the second round because Taylor Fritz, the American four seed, lost in the first round. Mm. We spoke about Ojeda Adeyasim. He lost against Kabali, unfortunately. Mm. We've got Christopher Eubanks. He's playing the six seed, Casper Ruud. And yeah, shouts out to Michael Moe, who also qualified. And he's got Holger Rune. So this will be their second meeting of the season.
I'm going to miss that one because it's too late. It's at 1:30 a.m.
So yeah, that wraps up this episode, guys. So thank you so much for tuning in. Tamani, thank you for joining us, man. Much appreciated.
As always.
I'm going to say, I don't know when we're going to have you back on, but yeah, we'll definitely have you back on at some point.
We'll be back.
100%. Well, like we said, best friend of the pod.
Best.
But yeah, guys, man, thank you for tapping in. Until next time.